Welcome to New Books in Food. I'm your moderator, and my name is Valerie St. Rossi. Today I'm very pleased to be speaking with Jeanette Seaver, an author of 4 cookbooks and the translator of the book that we will be discussing today, which is called French Country Cooking. This is a book that is not your typical cookbook. The author is a deputy in the French House of Representatives. In France, this is called the National Assembly. And she went among her fellow colleagues and said, I would like to compile a book of France's most traditional recipes, and I would like to receive one from you from your region. And she got 180 responses. One of her responses happened to be from a deputy at that time whose name is François Hollande. We know him now as the supreme diplomat and prime minister of France. Let me say something about our distinguished author today, however. Jeanette Seaver, in 2012, was awarded by the government of France the highest civilian honor, the Legion of Honor. She received this for her lifelong services to French culture, both as a publisher and a writer, over a period of several decades. Jeanette selected this book, French Country Cooking, whose author is Françoise Bonjou, to let us explore the cooking in France that is not haute cuisine, it's not restaurant cooking, it's not trendy cooking. It is the cooking that's called food from deep France. In French, that is la France profonde. My first question, Jeanette, what is deep France?
Well, deep, la France profonde, is really the authentic villages throughout France that are off the beaten path. In other words, not the large cities, but the smaller towns, sometimes villages, where traditions emanate from hundreds of years. That's la France profonde.
This is rural cooking, is that correct?
It is indeed, yes.
And I believe that there's something about this rural cooking that is reflected throughout this book, having to do with the cooking of poverty.
Well, no, first of all, each député provided, what's interesting about this book, a recipe from his or her family from quite a long time back. Some of those recipes, in fact, were passed on from generation to generation since the revolution, number one. Number two, what's interesting, one learns historically that what is considered really la haute cuisine, gastronomie française, really at one point started from extreme poverty. That is, the farmers or people who tended large estates did not, let's say, have the permission to fish, as their seigneur did, or hunt. They could cultivate the land for themselves, I'm talking about. And therefore, creativity came into play. French are quite creative, and as a nation, whimsical and creative, and although in some cases they had, not as many resources, depending on the climate and the soil, they would create from potato or from wheat. things that are delicious but are not costly. They didn't have a variety of products and produce. They could cook. They did cook, in fact, from what was growing around them. Sometimes it was herbs, sometimes some things they planted. They could use, obviously, eggs, poultry. But it was a very limited. And considering that, so many of the great, considered to be the great basis, the great basis of French gastronomy, really emanates from very simple, plain ingredients. That's what's so interesting.
Can you give me an example of one plain ingredient that has diverse treatment depending on the region?
Let me look at the book at this moment. There's so many.
I kept on seeing how different the potato recipes were.
Oh, extraordinary. Yes. Yes. I mean, and there is even a tart made with smashed potatoes and cheese. So you have here flour, butter, cheese, and potato. That is served sometimes as main course with a salad or in tiny little pieces as appetizer.
It seems that in every region, let's use the potato since we all know it very well, in every region there is a different fat used in the preparation.
Oh, very much so.
Maybe you could say what some of those different treatments are. Generally speaking, I guess in the South it's olive oil.
In the South it's olive oil and garlic. Start with that. In Brittany is a great deal of cream on the very, very rich with the cheese and the cream. So you have a lot of gratin that come from that particular region. And a great deal of mushrooms, for one thing, are very, very, and in fact, the author, the Françoise Branger herself, comes from a department near Lyon, actually. It's between the Jura and the Alps Mountains.
Ah.
And she, one of her recipes is very, very simple. It's really a toast with morille, with morel, I guess you say in English, with cream. And it's mushrooms are very big in that region because you can find them, for one. And again, it's not very expensive. It's something that you go get in the forest. I'm trying to think what else.
In the Southwest, it must be goose fat, right?
Yes, predominantly, yes. Mm-hmm. A lot of recipes with foie gras and truffles. But then again, in Burgundy, you will have a great variety of preparations of eggs. You have eggs in a Burgundy sauce, poached on a toast. And it's a great.
And they come out red, don't they?
They come out red indeed, yes. And it's delicious. You make a reduction of Burgundy, and it becomes a thick syrupy, and you poach your egg, and they present it over the poached egg, and it's very attractive and delicious.
Now, the name of that dish is begins with an M. I'm trying to remember.
Oh, let me see.
We'll come up with it. We can tell the listeners so they can rush to this cookbook and make it. Now, we are approaching the mashed potato holiday of America.
Yes.
Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And there's pretty much just one way to make mashed potatoes. People throw butter in.
Cream.
And that's what happens in America. When we contrast that with what we find in Bonjour's cookbook, There are 20 potato recipes.
That's correct. It depends on the region. For instance, in the Vosges mountains, you have a great deal of cheese, so you have mashed potatoes with cheese grated and melted in it. It's absolutely wonderful. Yes.
There are potato fritters too.
Indeed.
Isn't something that, it's not a mainstay in American cooking necessarily, perhaps more in the South, but fritters are a very thrifty way of using vegetables, aren't they?
Yes, yes.
I in particular find the selection of different animal parts
yes,
fascinating in this book.
Let me
Could
say
you
this.
Talk a little about that.
This comes again. I'll go back to the economy, the poverty. Now, when they had a chance to use, let's say, a pig, they used every little inch of that animal, the skin, the innards, in dozens of preparations, and of course the sausages and the ham, of course, the pâté, the terrine, the kidney, the liver, it goes on. Every part of the animal is used in some delicate way.
When we think of pâté, when we order it in a restaurant, we just think of it as something very delicious and very smooth, served with toast and cornichon or something. But we don't think about the origin of pâté and why it exists to use up all those different parts.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that changes their appearance.
Of course. But even today, charcutier in France will use a little bit of the leftover ham that they weren't selling yesterday. They chop it up and they put some port wine or some brandy and they mix it with other little bits of meat, different meats, and it becomes, with different ingredients and eggs and etc., the pâté de campagne, which is more coarse and exquisite as well. It's different. What you were referring to before was a mousse, plutôt. But,
yeah.
But the pâté de campagne is bits of different variety of meats and innards, like liver, and baked together, and you slice it, and you can see like a little mosaic. You can see little pieces.
So it has a visual appeal, mm-hmm. as well as a wonderful taste.
Indeed, yes.
Now, I just want to give our listeners the name of the eggs poached in Burgundy wine reduction, which is on page 70. This is a au vin meurette.
Here we go. Hang on. Where is it?
And there's a beautiful photograph.
It's a beautiful photograph, yes.
It looks like grapes almost, reduction of grapes.
Yes, it does. Uh-huh.
There are a few things about this book that make it extraordinary among French cookbooks. And I have been looking at French cookbooks for a long time. One of the things is very striking yet simply presented dishes in photos.
Yes.
It looks like a country table.
Yes, it does. It really symbolizes the simplicity and the rural aspect of the origin of the gastronomy. You're right.
The silverware in a photo.
Uh-huh.
I know that this silverware belonged to their grandmother.
Yes.
You can just tell by that,
yes.
that simple, basic shape of fork, of knife, and there's usually a piece of rough cloth
yes.
folded underneath and a plain dish.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is focused on this is what this dish looks like. And they are all mouth-watering.
Yes, they are. It's beautifully illustrated, indeed.
The recipes are arranged by their département.
Yes.
Something like counties.
Yes.
The American equivalent. And what's very interesting to me is that they all have a number. So this cookbook starts at number one.
Yes.
And gives you the name of the department. And then above that, on every page, is a map of France with a little dot.
Yes.
Showing where this dish comes from.
Yes.
And then you have what an understanding of, it's in the middle of France. It's not going to be shrimp. It's not going to be coastal food at all.
It's true.
So you're receiving a profile of...
It really is an armchair travelogue. I mean, you really travel through France, and what appealed to me is that you get little bits of history, not only geography. You understand, this used to be a larger county, and this is the reason. I mean, it gives you anecdotes, little bit, very light, enough to make you want to go there.
Each of the deputies wrote a short introduction before the recipe, and about one-sixth of them said, this brings back the happy days of childhood.
Yes.
Over and over.
That's
my
true.
Grandmother always served this on Sunday.
Yes.
You feel like you are at home with people.
It's so true. It's an exceptional book. It's an exceptional book, and it is very, it has really Gallic charm. I was very taken by it, and there's a little bit of humor. I mean, the French title is La Cuisine de la République, which is cooking from French Republic, which could not be translated as such. It wouldn't mean anything in English per se, but it really englobes the entire tradition, gastronomy.
And the subtitle in French is Cooking Along with Your Deputies. And that would never translate into English either.
No.
Cook with your congressman. You know, it wouldn't taste good to us.
No, you're so right. Well, no. let me see. That's the art of translation. Some things just simply do not work literally. You have to make an adaptation so that it is culturally correct in context.
How did you first discover this book?
You know, interestingly, there was a review. It appeared in France, like Cuisine de la République, and to my surprise, there was a big review in the New York Times of the French edition. It had not been translated, and it was describing with enthusiasm and homage to the French, saying, extraordinary, all these members of parliament or deputies are so into their tradition of food and ancestral tradition that they were only too glad to share family secrets. And it really gives an image of us, of France, how much food is so important. It is really deeply part of our culture. And when I read that article, it also had a little Cuisine de la République. It's funny. It does not translate as such. It's not funny if you translate it literally. But it amused me. I was very charmed by the article. So I called the French publisher immediately in Paris, and the American rights were available, and I bought it. And then I realized nobody could translate it except me, because I added little historical information that was not in the French, because they don't need to know that. It's our country. But I felt for the American readers, it would be helpful to explain a little more this than the other particularity of that region. So I really, it was a labor of love on my part.
I would like to add for our listeners that when you say you bought the book, that's because you are the publisher of Arcade Publishing.
Yes.
And so you do publish books. And I would like to also tell them that even though you have a non-French last name, Siever, you are, of course, une Française.
Tout
you are
fait.
From France.
Yes.
And are you from Paris?
I was born in Paris, yes.
So then the next question is, what is your recipe that you would have put into this book? Representing...
Oh, you know, I can't really answer that because I have a huge repertory. And you know, for me, cooking is like art. It depends on our daily mood. You're maybe in the mood for a pot-au-feu today, and I make a very good pot-au-feu. And in this book, there's a wonderful recipe of duck pot-au-feu with foie gras wrapped in a poached leaf of... cabbage. And so you have the regular traditional pot-au-feu, but with duck this time, not with beef. And then all the vegetables in the broth, and you have little packages of foie gras poached in a cabbage leaf. It's just so simple and attractive. So you asked to answer your question. I was digressing. I don't have a recipe. Depending on the mood, depending how the sun shines, I could do a grand aioli, I could do any number of oyster dishes. It depends. It truly, I have a huge repertory and I'm very whimsical. It depends on how I feel that day.
That's wonderful. I have just turned to the duck pot-au-feu recipe and it comes from the Dordogne. Will you tell us where that is?
The Dordogne is in the southwest of France, and it is one of the richest parts of, culinarily speaking, of France. It has incredible produce, but it has basically a great deal of geese and ducks and truffles and mushrooms. It is a fabulous part. I mean, it's a fabulous part. I mean, you have the cassoulet, the ducks in any different ways, and
Armagnac comes from there too, doesn't
indeed,
it?
Indeed, yes.
Mm-hmm. So these are not specialty items in the Dordogne: duck, truffles, and foie gras. This is outside. The mushrooms are in the forest.
Yes.
The foie gras is in the yard. You're feeding your geese.
Yes.
And your ducks, you have ducks.
Yes.
So it sounds like a fancy dish to city people, because if we order it in a restaurant, it is fancy. But not when those are your raw ingredients. I have been looking at a book called The Discovery of France, which is a history of how France became unified through the railroad system. In the 19th century, before there were railroads, France was a dozen or more different little places.
Yes, indeed, very much.
No contact at all, because land travel was not easy.
Exactly.
Necessarily.
It's so true.
And so peasants stayed peasants. The farmers, people who lived off the land, what they used was what they could get from their region. And it's very interesting that the book says this was not only a weakness, but a strength, this economic isolation.
Yes, indeed. It's so true. Yes.
They were talking about Flaubert, the famous author of Madame Bovary, who lived along the river. He was downstream from Rouen. Rouen is about, it's about 74 miles from Paris. To the west, and he felt that he was in a good place in 1840, 1850s, because he saw people coming back and forth, and he was in the swing somewhat on the river flowing out of Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one day he noticed somebody on the towpath who was wearing a Prussian helmet. France was being invaded
yes.
by Germany, and he was right in the path. So they took over his house. They drank his wine. So much for ease of transportation. And the farmers, on the other hand, who were lived 12 miles from him, were never invaded. They did very well. The lack of transport
was
their
it was critical. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Yes. Their little town of Rye, which is R-Y, Rye, was doing perfectly well throughout the whole war. So, and in a way, their produce would have been absorbed immediately by
yes.
the Germans.
Yes.
Just everything on your farm, all your eggs, all your chickens, all your wine, all your... And so they drank all of Flaubert's wine, but they didn't get to the village and take anything that the farmers needed for their own subsistence.
It's very interesting, yes.
Isn't that a strange...
It's all due to
irony.
Locomotion and transportation and lack thereof. You're right.
Yeah, so in terms of economic mobility, that was lacking.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, self-sufficiency had its... had its advantages. I was also reading here that people didn't have just one job in these villages and farmers, that they had six or seven jobs depending on, well, if it's winter, you're not farming. You're doing something else.
Sure.
You're working, you're a woodworker.
Of course.
I was reading that shepherds made cheese, wove straw hats, knitted, carved, hunted, they were smugglers too, they bred dogs, and served as guides for tourists and people going through the land, and they played musical instruments to amuse the sheep.
That's so interesting,
and
yes.
And keep away the wolves. Now, you know, when you hear about that, you think, well, this is an economy that is as diverse as anything you could imagine.
Yes. The French are very creative. Yes, indeed. In a great many directions. Yes. Yes.
There is there's something going on in French restaurants today, in France, that I would like to know your thoughts on. Like all restaurants, saving money is a chief concern of a restaurateur. And there are food industries in France, just as there are food industries in the United States, that pre-cut French fries, they flash freeze spinach, they'll make pot-au-feu in the factory, and deliver it in a sous vide package, plastic package.
Yes. What are you trying to say? I'm trying to.
Well, the French have been in an uproar about this.
Yes.
And they have created a mark for restaurants, a designation called the homemade logo. Homemade is what it means, and it means fait maison in French, made in the restaurant.
Yes. Now,
how do you think this sits with the general eater?
Oh, you know, until very recently, French are very picky. They know it has to be fresh, it has to be made behind the stove right there. On the other hand, France, as all the other countries, have evolved. There's less time, there's less energy to be spent cooking, so that you do. There is one wonderful company in France, Picard, that sells frozen or flash frozen or very delicious I wouldn't say haute cuisine, but certainly good cuisine. You can buy marvelous things prepared that have nothing to do with what you can find here. There's no equivalent. It's really, so these have, it has seeped in, I'm sorry to say, in the habit of the 25-year-old working couple who has less time to make the pot-au-feu, who buys indeed things that have been flash boiled or just, you have to evolve with your time. And while it's regarded as very, very important in a home or in a restaurant, on a day-to-day basis, young working couples have less time than their mothers, their fathers, to make the pot-au-feu, which really should simmer for several hours. You don't have the several hours. You don't have the several hours to do the pâte feuilletée because you're not home. You're in wherever you are working. So that, as we do in this country, in America, you now have, you're relying on the almost same food, but done by someone else that you buy. So that's how I feel.
Is the interest in having cooking skills shared by this age group that you're describing?
Mm-hmm.
So do they still want to be sure they know how to make?
I think the art of gastronomy has somewhat, I wouldn't say disappeared, but is not as obvious as it was when I was growing up. For the same reason I explained 2 minutes ago, I think the new generations have no time and they have had no, the tradition, the culinary tradition exists, but not so much in making as it is in enjoying.
Enjoying.
Yeah.
In the introductory paragraphs to the recipes in this book, the deputies all say, we ate this on Sunday, my mother made this on special occasions, and this is describing the importance of eating together and the family meal.
Oh, yes. And I have to tell you, there's something that does not exist in this country, and that is, and it exists all through Europe and it's in England as well, the Sunday lunch is sacrosanct. You go throughout France, every restaurant is booked or fully occupied. When you are invited somewhere for le déjeuner du dimanche, it's like going to church. It's very important. And it is celebrated in every family, poor or not. It's a tradition. Yeah.
Would this be a meal of many courses? Let's go back to one of the homes of the grandmother of the deputy, say, or even their mother.
It would be still today you have the protocol. You have the first course, you have a soup or not, but very often you have a little soup, you have the hors d'oeuvre, the appetizer, then you have the main course with one or two vegetables, not 100 vegetables like in America, just one, the appropriate one that goes with whatever, roast or fish or fowl, a salad, green salad, a little bit of cheese. This is traditional, even if it's one cheese rather than a plateau, and then a dessert. But now the pâtisseries have taken such a you see very often, if you walk the streets end of morning on Sunday morning in Paris or anywhere in the province, you see people walking with a box with a little ribbon from the pâtissier. So you do buy the ready-made wonderful cake or tart, and you serve that food. So whatever the economy or the level of wealth of any even simple family, there is the premier plat, the main course, in salad, cheese, and dessert. It's just the way it is. It could be very, very, very simple, mind you, but there is a protocol.
this is the thing that the cookbooks written by chefs completely obscures, because it's all spotlights and...
Yes, you're right, which is why this book has its place. It's very in its own way. A lot of the dishes are known. It's not terribly... It's revelatory. You do have classic French cuisine that you are pretty much aware of, but it's the context in which it's presented. That's what you're saying, and you're right.
I would say that in this cookbook, there are probably 10 or 12 dishes that we all know.
Mm-hmm.
They're bedrock of French cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are many that we don't know.
I know, that's the fun. I agree.
I am a dessert aficionada.
Ah.
And I love to bake. So, of course, the recipes I looked at first were the desserts. And I made something that was very unusual because it called for almond meal. It was a dessert of cherries or berries. I used berries. I think I used currants, red fresh currants.
Mm-hmm.
With so simple, eggs, sugar, almond meal.
Oh, you mean a clafoutis?
It wasn't a clafoutis. It's called something else.
Oh, there are varieties of this flan.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
No, of course. I do a whole bunch of those, yes. And you can do it with all sorts of fruit, with pears, with bananas, for that matter.
The thing that was interesting to me was that it had no flour in it.
No,
and
that's
now,
right.
Now, but, today... Oh, please.
No, I'm sorry.
Today, people are trying to use different grains. They're trying to take a break from wheat. Here is a perfect recipe, this dessert. And it was used because there were a lot of almond trees.
That's right.
Of course. I mean, it had nothing to do with, I have to make something that's dans le vent, in style.
No, I agree.
Now, I'm looking at a two-page spread that absolutely looks like modern art.
Tell me which one is that?
It's on page 198 and 199.
Okay.
And you'll see what I mean. The picture on the left looks like a Mondrian or Modigliani drawing. It's actually a photograph of the lid of a casserole.
Yes.
Surrounded by
dough.
The dough, which seals it.
Yes, it's beautiful. You're right.
And it's just art.
Yes, it is.
You can't believe it. It looks like a sculpture.
Yes, it does.
And then on the opposite page is a dish towel.
Yes.
Once again, that touch of simplicity. And the casserole showing what's inside.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks so delicious.
It is.
And it's a one-pot baked dinner from Alsace.
That's right, from Alsace, yes.
Right, the Beckhofer, right? Is that how you say it?
Yes.
So that's right up against... It's from the region High Rhine, Haut-Rhin, and it's right against alongside Germany. So it has nice meat, nice potatoes,
and it has smoked. A great emphasis at that part of where the choucroute comes from, like choucroute alsacienne, comes from smoked pork, smoked pork, and cabbage.
You can really smell the aroma of this dish.
Yes.
Because the pastry seal has been lifted off, and there it is.
It's really beautifully done.
Oh.
It's really very, very, you know, in reality, I've done it quite often. When you lift the lid, what you really do, you cover the dish with dough, and then you put the lid to lower it, to double mm-hmm. making sure that it, okay. When you unmold it, undo it, when you open it to serve, sometimes the rim of dough doesn't come out as impeccably as it is on the picture. Sometimes it,
yes.
And it's also lovely. It doesn't matter.
Right, because that's simply like a piece of foil. It's not to eat.
Correct.
It was the gasket.
Yes.
And now, a few pages later, page 204, is this wonderful almond meal dessert I was talking about.
Yes, yes.
The gâteau aux cerises. It said make it with raspberries, cherries, black currants. And it looks positively wonderful.
It does. And it.
I can assure you it was wonderful.
I bet it is. I bet it was, of course. Of course, that almond meal is a blessing.
Now, there is an interest now, again in France, because I was reading this in the New York Times food section a little earlier in the year, that the bistro, which has been a mainstay of Paris cuisine for a century at least, I'm sure you're even more knowledgeable about that than I am, but the bistro has it's the definition of bistro is a little under fire, that people are trying either to update every dish or add fusion, that ominous word in cooking, or the dedicated, I want to make bistro dishes, period, because that's what people like to eat. Now, who is the traditional diner in a bistro?
Oh, your regular guy who works, or the woman, the people who, working people, they go for lunch. They
so
go
it
for
was the family. Diner, and our equivalent is the diner, right? Perhaps, or
smidgen higher, but
yeah.
I think the idea would be that you go anywhere in France at lunchtime, and you see people coming out of their office and just, you're right, sitting down for their whatever, but it's a regular meal with a tablecloth and simple food, mind you, but excellent. It is bistro food. Of course, that's been glamorized and made even better. Oh, Al, you know, you started the onion soup and this and that. All stemmed from very simple, but it became glamorous.
So these dishes probably had, they were regional, so soup à l'oignon, we all know that here, onion soup, and the steak pommes frites,
mm-hmm.
people know about that. They're classic dishes, and they aren't necessarily, they're consumed nationally, but some of them are more regional. I know you can count on a bistro having a dish that one in 10,000 people like, and I happen to be that one in 10,000, which is tripe.
Oh, I love that.
And that's the, you can get that tripe in the fashion of Caen is a classic dish.
Sure.
So, and Caen is located
in the north.
Mm-hmm. Is it along the Seine?
No.
No.
Caen is, no. It's, I can't remember what river, but it's, yeah, it's true that I very few people cook tripe in America. They actually bristle and shrink away when you mention tripe.
Grimace, yes. Now, Caen is at the foot Normandy, where it's south of Le Havre, south of Deauville.
Mm-hmm.
So it's rather close to the English Channel, not too far.
Yes.
I'm looking at a map
right now. Yes, you're right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. In fact, that's right. Yeah.
So it's somewhat close to the coast.
Yeah.
And it's north.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So now, and the chefs, the owners of the bistro are saying, I'm only making what people want because they've eaten here all the time. And I'm not going to change it and add cilantro and...
Absolutely not. You're right. It's complete. They're wedded to their tradition and their local sources.
Well, that's it. And not all of them are saying that. Some of them are thinking, well, my menu will appeal to more people if I diversify.
Well, it depends. You know, French people didn't used to travel. Certainly when I was growing up, which isn't very long ago, and now everybody travels. And by that I mean young chefs, housewives, house chefs taste different cuisine, different herbs, and that is why now there is a diversion, if you wish, from the classic, simply because people have tasted different flavors.
This, and also a big city like Paris or Lyon, this will be much more in evidence. I would like to add that this book actually does present the influence of the exotic, because there are five or six French departments which are not located in France.
Yes.
One is Guadeloupe,
yes.
One is Martinique.
Yes.
One is Reunion Island, which is near Mozambique in the Indian Ocean.
Right.
And Mayotte. And those dishes are extraordinary. They're Caribbean. The ingredients mm-hmm. are, once again, local for that place and a geography.
True. And spices.
Yes, and spices.
Yeah.
So... there's even some recipes from Tahiti, mm-hmm. which is French Polynesia.
Sure.
So we're not limited in
no,
this
no.
book.
No, no,
to...
no, no. It's politically correct in that sense.
I would like to ask you if you could tell us a dish that lives in your memory from your family, my mother cooked, my grandmother, as these deputies have said. Can you think of something that you always ate on Sunday?
Well, I tell you what my mother did on Mondays, because when I was growing up, Monday, all the stores were closed. In good part, they still are, but they've modernized their habits. But when I was growing up, everything was closed. The boucher, the charcutier, the this and that. The only open one was the boulanger, the bread. Okay, so on Monday, my mother used to make what she called l'omelette du lundi, which is a wonderful soufflé, with several layers of souffléed omelette. They were like a cake. It had three mm-hmm. or four, and in between each, it's one of my cookbooks, actually, crumbled ham on one layer, crumbled gruyere on the second, and ended with some parsley on top. And we had that with a big salad. It was wonderful. That was l'omelette du lundi. I now serve it for Sunday brunch, or it's a meal. It's just light, and it's wonderful.
So that name, can you tell us what that name would be in English?
Souffléed omelette, layered souffléed omelette.
Monday omelette.
Yeah, I called it right. because that's my mother right. called it that, but
yeah.
it would mean nothing in the American
yeah.
context.
Yeah, of course.
I would have to call, and I think I have it in one of my cookbooks.
Do you think it's in Jeanette's?
No, it's in the first one, Jeanette's Everyday Good Cooking. Yeah, I think it is.
Oh, wonderful. Well, now that book was published in 1975.
Is that what it was?
So,
I couldn't remember.
Yeah, Jeanette's Secrets of Everyday Good Cooking. So rush off to Amazon and see if you can find it. My copy is extremely spilled upon. That was before the days of photocopies, so yes. The book was right on the stove.
Yes, me too. Yes, indeed. Well, there you go. Food is fun. Food is a, it's the thing about food, the conviviality that it creates. You put food, a pot of whatever on the table with your family, with your friends, and it engenders conviviality.
We don't often see conviviality when we turn the pages of a cookbook.
No.
We see the skill, we'll see a photo of a chef, we'll see someone in a market. But the end, the goal of cooking is people, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's I would say 50-50.
And the 50 is the food. And the other 50 is the...
It's the giving and the sharing.
The giving. Well, I would like to thank you so very much.
It's my great
for
pleasure.
Giving us time. And I know that as a publisher and a translator and an editor, there's never enough time for the work.
Indeed not. But it was a great pleasure to speak with you, Valerie. And I hope we will seduce readers and chefs and eaters
to come to this book.
Yes.
So once again, the name of the book, today's book, is French Country Cooking, Authentic Recipes for Every Region. The author's name is Françoise Branget, Branget, and it's published by Arcade Publishing. Jeanette Sievert, thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
And me as well. Thank you so much indeed.
And thank you very much for listening to New Books in Food.